Major lunged at Smoke and snapped a left at him. Smoke flicked it away. The two big men circled around each other.
I win. You call off the boycott against the saloon.
Agreed.
Major swung a wicked right that just missed.
I win. You leave town.
Agreed. But don't get your hopes up too high.
Smoke knocked the living hell out of Major. The blow came out of nowhere and staggered the big man backward. It was not unlike being kicked by a damn horse. The hit had caught him flush on the mouth and bloodied his lips, sending pain coursing through his head. Before he could get set, Smoke pressed. Smoke threw two lefts and two rights to the head, and they hurt. Major Cosgrove felt his jaw beginning to swell and knew one eye would soon be closing from the terrible blow. He backed up, shaking his head. The blood flew with the effort. Meanwhile, outside the saloon, a huge crowd was gathering, threatening to collapse the boardwalk. About 50 men ran around to the rear and entered through the back door of the saloon, lining the walls.
This better than a gunfight, ain't it, Lefty?
Oh, hell yeah! Lasts longer.
Smoke knew kick and gouge, boxing, rough and tumble, and engine wrestling. And he was gonna show Major Cosgrove a little bit of all of it. Smoke pushed in. He took a right to his head. The blow had power behind it, and it hurt, splitting the skin. But it didn't slow Smoke down. Ignoring a hastily thrown left from Cosgrove, Smoke plowed in. Major dropped his guard for just a second, and Smoke seized the moment. He reared back and busted Major flush in the chops, scoring the first clear knockdown of the fight. Major landed heavily on the floor and lay there for a moment, looking dazed and disbelieving that something like this could happen to him.
Stay down! Catch your wind!
Smoke backed up and gave the man a chance to climb to his boots. Major glared balefully at the man, blood dripping from his busted lips.
I thought you weren't gonna fight like a gentleman.
Smoke shrugged his shoulders and waited, letting his hands hang to his sides. Major rose to his boots. The entire front of his white shirt was now stained with blood. One eye was closing, and his face was bruised. Club picked up a pitcher of water from the bar and walked to Cosgrove, pouring it onto his head. Major shook his head, and bloody water flew in all directions.
Thanks, Club. That helped.
Major wiped his eyes on the sleeves of his shirt and lifted his fists.
I'm ready, Jensen.
I'll call it off, and we'll shake hands, Major. Then you leave Jenny alone, and everybody will be friends. How about it?
I haven't even got my first wind yet, gunfighter.
Then that makes you a fool. I'll not give you another break.
I know how you fight now.
Then come on, big shot. Take your licking like a man.
Major Cosgrove charged Smoke, both big fists windmilling. Smoke was forced to back up under the savage, almost mindless onslaught. One big fist struck him in the side of the head and knocked him back. Another slammed into Smoke's side. Smoke quickly recovered and ducked and sidestepped the wildly charging man, then smacked the Major on the jaw with the left and then a right to the mouth that further pulped the man's lips and brought a dazed look to his eyes. Smoke set himself and hammered at Major's face. The blows drove the man back, his backward movement knocking over chairs and shoving tables aside. Major grabbed up a chair and splintered it over Smoke's shoulders. Smoke had turned just in time to prevent the chair from taking him in the face. So much for Major conducting himself as a gentleman. The chair had torn Smoke's shirt and bruised and cut the flesh on his shoulders and upper back. Smoke backed up, picked up a chair, and hurled it at Cosgrove. The chair striking the man in the face and chest and knocking him off his feet. Smoke backed off and let the man get up. Major was much slower getting to his feet this time. Blood dripped from his nose and mouth. When he spit, he sprayed blood.
Give it up, man.
To hell with you, gunfighter.
Smoke stepped in close and drove a big right fist through Major's guard that connected solidly with the man's jaw. Major swayed on his feet for a second, then called on his deep reserves of strength and recovered. He pressed in, stumbling as he came. Smoke hit the man in the belly and drove a savage left hook into his ribs. Major turned. Smoke pounded his kidneys, and Major crawfished back, his bloody face a mask of hurt. Smoke pressed hard, driving both fists into Major's face, smashing his nose and further pulping his lips.
Go down, Major!
Cosgrove only shook his battered head and stayed on his boots. Smoke stepped up and swung a wicked right, the fist colliding against Major's jaw. Part of a tooth flew out of the man's mouth, and he went to his knees. Major Cosgrove gripped the side of a sturdy table and slowly pulled himself to his feet. He lifted his fists. His face was bruised and torn, and one eye was closed. The man's expensive shirt was in bloody tatters, his suspenders hanging down, ripped and flopping. His breeches were torn and dusty from the floor of the saloon. He advanced. Smoke feigned, and Major bought it. That was all Smoke needed. He smashed at the man with three wicked blows to the face, driving Cosgrove back, stumbling and staggering. Smoke hit the man in the belly with everything he could put behind the punch, and Major doubled over, his face white with sickness. Smoke gave him a savage uppercut that straightened Major up to his toes. Then Smoke stepped in and hooked to the side of the jaw. Major went down. This time, he didn't move. Smoke stepped to the bar and picked up a pitcher of water, pouring it on his head. Lefty handed him a bar towel, and Smoke dried his face.
Club, tell the men outside to come in and have a drink on me. This place is now open for business to all who want to come in.
Major Cosgrove did not show his face on the streets of Red Light until 1 week after the fight in the Golden Plum. Even then, his face was still mottled with fading bruises and marked with healing cuts. He walked slowly because of several still badly bruised ribs. His anger had now been replaced with a savage hatred for Smoke Jensen and everything and everybody connected with him. Smoke knew now that the killing fields were fertile and would soon blossom blood red with the flowers of death.
Sally, Jenny, you two do not leave the ranch. Cosgrove has got to make his move against us here. His long-distance shooter, Hankins, has been in the area for several days. Right now, he's up on the ridges mapping out the best place to shoot from. Indians have spotted him and told Bad Dog. It's all down to the wire now.
Smoke walked the grounds of the ranch complex. All fire barrels were full. The area had been cleared of excess brush and anything else that might burn. Smoke had worked alongside the others, cutting the tall grass for several hundred yards all around the complex, and then burning what was left down to the roots, leaving the area void of hiding places. Sneaking up on the ranch was going to be near impossible now. 1 week after the fight in the Golden Plum, Sally told Smoke that they had to have supplies. Smoke nodded his agreement.
All right, I'll take Wolf, Bad Dog, and Barry with me. We'll take two wagons. The rest of the men will stay here.
It's close to the inn now, isn't it?
You know I've never held back from you, Sally. There'll be an all-out effort to kill me now.
That's been tried before, honey.
I seem to recall a few times, yeah. You better see to bandages and alcohol and ointments and so forth. I have a hunch we're all going to get bloodied before this fight is over.
Then why don't they come on out here and try to run me off?
Smoke and Sally turned. Jenny stood with a .45 belted around her waist and a rifle in her hands.
Now you just calm down.
No, Aunt Sally, I won't calm down. My mother left this ranch to me and the businesses in town. I have a right to live here and be safe. I won't let Fosburn and Biggers and Cosgrove and their hoodlums interfere with my life another time. But I have no right to ask somebody else to fight and die for me. Mr. Van Horn?
Yes, Miss Jenny?
See that my horse is saddled. I am going to town and handle my own affairs.
Yes, ma'am.
Smoke tried to hide his grin, but he failed miserably. He wanted to tell his niece that it would be extremely dangerous for her to ride into town. But that girl had Jensen blood flowing in her veins, and to the best of his knowledge, no Jensen on his side of the family had ever shirked their duty, at least as they saw it.
Even his sister Janie, no count as she might have been, had done her best to raise a good girl and see to her future, and that counted for something. Van Horn led a dainty stepping paint pony up to the house. The mare was not a big horse, but it had a heart as big as any horse on the spread, and it loved its master. Jenny had fallen in love with the paint at first sight and had gentled it herself. Jenny booted a rifle and swung into the saddle.
She's a Jensen, all right.
Wolf and Bad Dog rode the wagons. Jenny rode beside Smoke at the head of the procession, and Barry rode rear guard. The town tamer had grown thinner in the few weeks since he'd signed on. Smoke suspected the man was seriously ill and wanting to go out in a blaze of glory. Even though Barry had not let up on his working around the ranch, Smoke had noticed he always kept a bottle of pain-killing laudanum handy.
I'm gonna ride back with Barry for a time, Jenny. You lead this parade, okay?
Yes, sir.
Barry looked at Smoke as he swung back and fell in beside him on the bumpy road.
How far along is your cancer, Barry?
How'd you know?
Just a guess.
Doc down in Butte said I might last out the summer, but that the end would be no way for a man to go. I don't intend to go out screaming in pain.
Not much I can say, is there?
Not a thing, Smoke. I'm just proud I've had the chance to ride with you and help out that young lady up yonder. My own daughter would have been about 3 years older than her.
Would have been.
Outlaws killed her when she was just a baby. And after they had their way with my wife, they killed her too.
Yeah, I know the feeling.
Yeah, I know the story. Summer of 72, wasn't it?
Smoke nodded, the memories rushing back.
Something like that tears a man wide open. It leaves a terrible, invisible wound that don't never really heal. You got the ones who done it to your wife and baby. I got the ones who did it to mine. Now you and me got the same opinion of outlaws.
For a fact, we do. Does Van Horn know?
Oh, yeah. Me and that old pistolero go way back. He learned me about guns. I'd appreciate it if you wouldn't tell no one else.
I won't.
You know where that old lightning blaze tree is up on the east slope above that little spring?
Yeah.
I'd appreciate it if you'd plant me there. I want to listen to the winds blow and the wolves howl. I always liked wolves. Never had no quarrel with them. I like to think they'll come down and visit me from time to time. Jenny will come and see me now and then, too. I know she will. She's a good girl. Makes a man feel good to know his final resting place will have visitors every now and then.
You sound like you're telling me goodbye, Barry.
Pain's getting worse. I can nearabouts control it with laudanum, but I don't know for how much longer. I may not get another chance to say my farewells.
I'd ride the river with you anytime, Barry.
That's mighty high praise coming from you, Smoke. Now you go back up yonder and ride beside that little niece of yours. She's got spunk, that one. She'll do. Van Horn thinks the world and all of her. So do I.
Smoke rode back up ahead to join Jenny.
Everything all right, Uncle Smoke?
It will be, baby. It will be.
Smoke knew they were in trouble the instant they rode into town. The boardwalk in front of every saloon and gambling house was lined with strangers, each wearing one or two tied-down guns. Smoke knew some of them. Cosgrove, Biggers, and Fosburn had sent for the best they could find within a week's ride of the town. He spotted the man called Keno. Standing beside him was the Texas outlaw Bert Nevins. Sitting down was Amos Mann from over Nebraska way. Directly across the street were the King twins, Burn and Eddie. They smiled at Jenny and tipped their hats.
Goddamn worthless trash! I hope they has the audacity to speak direct to that girl. I'll gut both of them.
Jenny grinned and looked back at Wolf.
You don't pay no never mind to that pair of white trash, girl.
Burn heard Wolf. How the hell could he miss it?
Oh, man! You best watch your mouth before I take a notion to jerk you off that wagon and stomp your guts out.
Whoa!
Wolf hopped down, leaving the wagon in the middle of the street. He walked over to the boardwalk, stepped up onto it, and knocked that gun hand smooth off the boards and onto the ground. Turning, he smashed one huge, gnarled old fist into the gut of Eddie, doubling the man over. Fern crawled to his knees and tried to reach for a gun. With no more motion than he'd feel stomping on a scorpion, Wolf kicked the man in the face. Then reached down, pulled their guns from leather, and tossed them into a watering trough. Jenny looked back and winked at Wolf. The old mountain man blushed.
Don't you be acting brazen now, girl. It ain't comely.
On the next block of the twisty street, Smoke's eyes narrowed as he spotted Rod Ivy standing beside Lonesome Ted Lightfoot. On the other side of Lightfoot stood Sam Jackson, one of the most worthless men ever to pull on a pair of boots. Standing behind him was the Missouri Ridge Runner, Clayton Charles.
Well, they sure scraping the bottom of the barrel with this crowd, ain't they?
For a fact. Back shooters. A whole bunch of them.
All these men gathered against us. I don't understand it.
I never seen so much human garbage in one place. Look there. Jesse Griffin and Cal Duffin. Those two are the scum of the earth.
Bad Dog nodded to Barry.
I saw Louis Devine and Ossie Burks, too. One thing bothers me, Barry. If the men fighting this one very nice little girl have so much money they can afford to hire all this scum, why do they want one small spread?
Power, my friend.
The white side of me understands that. The Indian side of me does not understand the yearning for more than a person needs to live comfortably.
It's a mystery for sure.
They stopped behind the large general store.
Jenny, you stay inside the store. Pick out something pretty for Sally. Some cloth, maybe. Something. It's going to take a good hour to choose and load these supplies. Barry will stay with you. I'll be about.
Are you going to start something, Uncle Smoke?
I might as well begin cutting the odds some, Jenny. Just remember this. All those men out there came here to kill you and me, and to help some very ruthless men to take something that doesn't belong to them. This is pure black and white, Jenny. There is no gray.
Smoke checked both guns and loaded up full. He walked behind the counter and took down a sawed-off double-barreled shotgun. He broke it open and loaded it up. He put a handful of shells in his jacket pocket, then turned to the very nervous shopkeeper.
Put this on my bill. Barry, you stay with Jenny. For sure they'll try to kill her this day.
They got to go through me to do it, and that ain't no easy task.
Smoke stepped out of the store and onto the boardwalk. He looked at Bad Dog, standing a few yards away. The man had found a chicken feather on the street and stuck it in his hair. That half-breed Cheyenne had one strange sense of humor.
Count plenty coup today. Take heap scalps.
I happen to know that you graduated the 8th grade and had offers to go to college.
Don't spread it around. It would destroy the image I've worked so hard to cultivate.
Okay, Clarence.
Hey, ixnay on the errands, Clay. Especially don't spread that around.
I wonder where the sheriff and his deputies are.
Wolf walked out the door.
I'm just betting they was all called out of town for some dire reason or other.
Oh, how nice for them.
Vern King and his brother were barreling up the boardwalk toward him.
Hey, you old son of a bitch! This is your day to die!
Excuse me, boys.
The old mountain man one-handedly lifted and leveled his Winchester Model 73-44-40 and thumbed the hammer back. The big slug caught the twin in the belly and dropped him to the boards. His brother jumped for cover, and the fight was on. Smoke saw a two-bit would-be tub who rode for Fat Jerk both 45s from leather. He leveled the shotgun and gave the punk both barrels from across the narrow street. The charge lifted the thug off his boots and sent him crashing through his store window.
Behind you, Uncle Smoke!
Smoke turned to see a wild-eyed man with a knife in his hand coming up fast. He reversed a heavy shotgun and smashed the man's skull with the stock, splintering the wood and rendering the express gun useless. Smoke pulled iron and went to work. In the back of the store, two of Cosgrove's toughs jumped onto the loading dock, rifles in their hands. They made it as far as the back door before running into Barry. The town tamer gave him 45 caliber Frontier Justice, the slugs knocking him back and sending him tumbling off the dock and onto the ground. Barry twirled his 45 and waited. Jenny lined up a rifleman on the roof of the store across the street and plugged him through the brisket with her short-barreled carbine. The sniper fell over the side, crashing through the awning and bouncing off the boardwalk. Bed Dog took out two in just about as many seconds. His guns left the pair motionless in the street, both shot through the heart. Paul Hunt found Smoke Jensen and lined him up in his sights. But before he could pull the trigger, he saw fire and smoke erupt from the muzzle of Jensen's .44. A heavy blow struck him in the belly, and he sat down hard, his .45 slipping from lifeless fingers. Pony Harris galloped his horse up the street, the reins in his teeth and both hands on pistols. Smoke shot him right off the Triangle JB mountain, and Gun for Hire rolled in the street. He rolled up onto the boardwalk and crashed through a window. He died in front of the receiving counter at Chung Lee's laundry. Meanwhile, several Fosburn men charged the rear of the general store and were cut down by withering rifle and pistol fire from Jenny and Barry. That young girl and the sick town tamer stood side by side and stacked up the bodies.
Keep guarding the rear. A minute ago, I saw fat Fosburn peeking out the window of his office across the street.
Jenny had a wicked look in her eyes as she punched rounds into her carbine and walked to the front of the store. She took down several rifles from the rack, loaded them all up, and stacked them beside her. Then she pointed one out the door and took aim. In the mayor's office, Fat Fosburn, Jack Biggers, and Major Cosgrove lay on the floor.
Now they are outnumbered 50-1. Smoke and his crew and that damn snip of a girl gotta be dead before long.
It was then that Jenny opened fire.
Jesus Christ!
A round struck the stove, whined off, and just missed Fosburn's head.
Ow!
Meanwhile, Smoke was crouched in the alley between the general store and an empty building. He carefully chose his targets and seldom missed. Both Parcell and Bad Dog had chosen good cover and were making each round count. Most of the hired guns started electing to stay out of this pitched battle. It had started out bad for their side, and it was getting worse. The second block of red light was littered with the dead and the dying. A few of the less severely wounded were attempting to crawl to the boardwalk. Doc White came out into the street, along with some volunteers, and started picking up the wounded and carrying them off. Smoke reloaded and walked down the center of the street. He stopped in front of the mayor's office.
Cosgrove, Biggers, Fosburn, let's settle it now. The three of you against me alone, in the street. Come on, you yellow-bellied mice. You're eager to fight a 17-year-old girl. Try me! Here's your chance!
Major's face appeared, framed by the broken window of the mayor's office.
Where the hell's my men? Kill that son of a bitch! That's what you men are getting paid for!
Smoke jumped to one side and rolled into an alley, just as the street once more erupted in lead and gun smoke. Jenny took aim at the office again, and her slug sent wood splinters into Cosgrove's face. He hit the floor, Biggers and Fosburn right behind him. The scream came from inside the general store. Smoke dived through the open side window. Barry was down, blood streaming from a cut on his head, and Jenny was grappling with Lucky Harry. Lucky was grinning at her and holding both her hands in one of his other hand roaming over her body, touching her places that made her face redden. Smoke closed the distance, jerked Lucky from the girl, and savagely broke the man's right arm at the elbow. Lucky passed out. Smoke picked him up and threw him through the one remaining storefront window. The unconscious gun hand bounced off the boardwalk and fell into the path of a galloping horse. Lucky's luck had run out. Barry's wound was not a serious one, and Smoke got him back on his feet while Jenny stopped the bleeding with a compress.
Hey, Bad Dog, Wolf, get in here. This thing is far from over.
The two men dashed for the cover of the solidly built store.
They got us cold, Smoke. Must be 50 or 60 men still on their feet out there. They're all around the place.
I look like Clemmy and her gals are barricading themselves in the Golden Plum. I saw Moses running out and grabbing firearms from the downed men and hauling butt back inside the saloon.
Are we trapped, Uncle Smoke?
Smoke's eyes had found several wooden crates stacked off to one side of the store. He smiled.
Well, now, they think we are.
They loaded up every available rifle, pistol, and shotgun in stock full, then placed them close to hand. Then they erected barricades of barrels and sacks of feed.
All right, everybody grab something to eat while we got the time.
Wolf sat on a sack of feed and started in on a jar of peaches.
Oh. Oh, this reminds me of the time that me and Frenchie Ledoux and Lobo and Powder Pete and Preacher was trapped inside a cabin with about 200 angry Kiowas outside. Got a right chancy there for a time, but we held them off to a standstill. We had plenty of powder and shot and victuals, but we did get on each other's nerves there towards the end.
How long were you trapped in there?
5 days, as I recall. Yeah, them Kiowas finally just gave up in disgust and rode off. We must have killed 100 of them. Oh, damn, them peaches was good.
Barry and Bad Dog, you defend the rear of the store. Me and Jenny and Wolf will watch the front.
Think they'll try a charge?
Oh, they'll try one. We ain't dealing with the most intelligent folks in the world. Them's hired guns out yonder. Too damn lazy to work and too stupid to realize that riding the outlaw trail is harder work than nearby to anything else they might do. They're cowards, most of them. Almost all bullies is. But what worries me is, ain't none of us seen hide nor hair of that back shooter Hankins. He could be out at the ranch right now, worrying the fool out of our people.
I have a hunch that's exactly where he is. But that house is a fort, and he can't get much closer than 500 or 600 yards. Besides, we'll be out of this bind in a few hours and back to the ranch an hour later.
Smoke Eared backed the hammer on his Winchester and pulled the stock to his shoulder. He sighted in and gently took up the slack on the trigger.
You got a plan, Smoke?
10 cases of dynamite over yonder in the corner. Plenty of caps and fuses. The street is narrow, and that makes for an easy toss. We'll liven up their day when the time is right, and then make a break for it. One man with a rifle can hold off an army at the curve of the mountain road coming into town. Then I'll blow it closed and catch up with you before you can reach the ranch.
It's a good plan, but no, I'll hold off the men and blow the pass. You need to be with Jenny and the wagons.
He's right, Smoke.
Suits me.
Been quiet for a while now. I figure they're getting ready to make a charge. They'll come all at once, front and back. Gets it!
Smoke looked at Jenny. The teenager had tossed her hat to one side and tied a bandana around her forehead. Her face was sooty from the gun smoke, but her hands were steady holding the short-barreled carbine. A bandolier of cartridges was slung across her chest, and she had belted a second gun belt around her slender waist. Wolf caught Smoke's eyes and grinned and nodded his shaggy head, then pulled his rifle to his shoulder.
Here they come!
The men charged with a roar. And with a roar 10 times as deadly, those inside the store fired, working the levers on their Winchesters as fast as they could. Smoke dropped his empty rifle and filled his hands with deadly .44s. Outside, a dozen men lay dead, dying, or badly wounded in the street.
Uncle Smoke, what will happen to Moses and Miss Clemmy and the girls once we leave?
Nothing, child. All they done so far is protect their interests. Right now, if news of them out yonder attacking you was to reach outside, they'd be 500 Montana cowboys in here before the week was over, all with knotted hang ropes in their hands, looking for Beggars and Cosgrove and Fallsburn. Not even the U.S. Army could stop them from stringing them men up. Western justice is harsh at times and unfair at times, but out here, you lay anything but a gentle hand and a kind word on a woman, you most likely dead.
But they're soiled doves.
That doesn't make any difference. They'll be all right.
Hey! Let us drag our wounded in to tend to them.
Go ahead. And while you're at it, check the buildings close by and make sure no women or kids are in danger. And then clear the streets of any stray horses.
Outside, several hired guns exchanged glances at that. Silently came to the conclusion that that was a fair man over there in the general store. So they holstered their guns and slipped away, heading for the livery. They wanted no more of this. The others watched them go and thought them fools, but they kept their opinions to themselves. While the street was being cleared of the wounded, Smoke and Wolf took that time to charge the sticks of dynamite.
This is gonna come as a right nasty surprise to them old boys across the street.
That's what I'm counting on. How about the wagons and the supplies?
We got nearly all of it loaded. The horses are still hitched up and all right. They're in the alley to my left.
You mean we're actually going to take the wagons?
Damn right. We came into town for supplies, didn't we?
When we start tossing this giant powder, there'll be so much dust and confusion and crashing of ruined buildings and hollering and moaning and groaning. It'll take those varmints over yonder 10 minutes to figure out what the hell happened. Well, by that time, we'll be clear of the pass and home free.
Bad dog, you and me to the second floor with the dynamite. We can get a better angle from up there. Jenny, to the back. Wolf, when I tap on the floor 3 times, you get the hell gone from the front of the store. Just as soon as the dynamite blows, open up with rifle fire and get to the wagons. We'll blow the rear on our way out.
Hot damn!
Smoke headed upstairs with more tied together dynamite. 3 sticks to a bundle.
The street's all clear, Jensen. No women or kids or animals close by.
Smoke didn't reply, not wanting to give away his new position overlooking the street. He tapped 3 times on the floor as he and Bad Dog were lighting the first bundle of dynamite.
I'm clear!
Smoke and Bad Dog hurled the sputtering lethal charges.
Oh, Jesus God, that's dynamite!
Mayor's office, Kino joint, one empty building, and Major Cosgrove's office erupted in 1,000,000 pieces of mud, dust, and dirt. Splinters, bits of paper, busted spittoons, broken coffee pots, pieces of glass, ragged remnants of 4 or 5 pairs of dirty long handles, shredded boots and shoes, and no small amount of various body parts. One entire wall collapsed on Biggers and Cosgrove and Fosburn. They weren't badly hurt, but they did pee in their underwear. The dust was so thick it was like a foggy night on the Barbary Coast. It swirled around like whirlwinds.
One more time, dog.
Let's get...
Smoking Bad Dog took off, each carrying a bundle of dynamite to give to those hired guns out back. But there was no need for that. Wolf and Barry and Jenny had each tossed a charge, and the back alley was thick with clouds of smoke and dust and hired guns lying on the ground. The only building left intact in the center of the east side of the second block was Chung Lee's laundry. Chung Lee was giving some serious thought of going back to China. Smoke didn't have to worry about blowing the pass. No one even heard him leave, much less pursued him as they rode out of town. They came to the pass and Smoke signaled them on, staying behind for a moment or two. He sat his saddle and looked down at the town. The entire town was enveloped in a cloud of dust and smoke from a dozen small fires started by overturned lanterns and cook stoves.
Well, let's get moving, Buck. I don't want to be late for dinner.
We have to move fast. Several families have moved out of Red Light. They're sure to talk about this situation, and that will attract the attention of the territorial governor. He'll send people in here. We can't have that.
Now, we've already confirmed that Jensen's a real U.S. Marshal. He could legally arrest all of us for attempted murder, extortion, God only knows what else. Why hadn't he done it?
Jensen doesn't want to do this the legal way, that's why. Jensen don't pay much attention to written law. He wants us dead. All of us.
Kit Silver says he can have more gun hands in here. I told him to go ahead. He left yesterday, right after the fight. By now, he sent the wires out and men are on the way. My God!
Cosgrove stood up from behind his new desk in his new office.
We're losing a fight against 9 men, 1 woman, and 2 teenagers! To date, our combined losses are about 25 dead and just about 20 wounded. Tough, top gunslingers are pulling out of this fight. Most didn't even wait around to get paid.
I say we hit the ranch.
Club Bowers looked at the man, but he offered no comment. Hitting the ranch would be suicide, in his opinion. One of his deputies had ridden out that way and reported back that the ranch looked more like a heavily fortified army post than a working ranch complex. The land around the complex had been cleared and burned for hundreds of yards. Peter Hankins had finally checked back in after several days in the field and said there was no way he could get a shot at anyone on the ranch. Time was on the side of Smoke Jensen and family, and Club knew it.
You have an opinion on any of this, Club?
Yeah. Give it up and live and let live.
You lost your mind? We can't give it up. We got too much money invested in this fight. The Golden Nose Mountain is worth a fortune.
Club stood up and walked to the door. He put his hat on his head and turned to look at the men.
Is it worth your lives?
He stepped outside and walked to his office. There, he sat on the bench on the boardwalk and looked at the work crews clearing out the wreckage from the dynamite. Cosgrove had sent men from the mines to clear the mess, and they were almost through. Now all that was left of very nearly a block was a great empty space in the center of town. The man and woman who owned the general store had flatly told Cosgrove that either he paid for repairing the store and replacing the damaged goods, or they were going to sue him and make certain every newspaper west of the Mississippi knew about it. At the prompt advice of Lawyer Dunham, Cosgrove told his men to go to work and told the store owner to order replacement goods and send the bill to him. Club knew that Cosgrove had lost the upper hand in Red Light. The merchants had banded together and told Club they would no longer pay protection money to him. They all went armed now, and his deputies were very nervous. On this morning, Club had told his men to enforce the law, and that was it. They took orders from him, not from Major Cosgrove, Jack Biggers, or Fat Fosburn. The big three didn't much like that, but Club Bowers really didn't much care.
It's over. The money men over yonder don't know it yet, but it's over. There'll be a lot more shooting and a lot of killing, but it's over. It's like I told the boys this morning. From now on, we enforce the law. We arrest whoever breaks it, including those three fat cats. Well, if I'm gonna go do what I gotta do, I better go do it and get her done.
Rider coming, Mr. Smoke. I think it's Club Bowers. He's alone.
Smoke stepped out of the house, buckling his gun belt around him. Sally and Jenny stood in the doorway. He looked up at Jimmy, who was in lookout position in the barn loft.
Thanks, Jimmy.
Smoke stood in the yard and waited. Club held up a hand.
I'm peaceful, Smoke. Can I step down?
Sure.
From this day on, Smoke, me and my deputies enforce the law as it is written. You break the law, I'll arrest you. We'll go down trying. The same thing goes for Cosgrove, Biggers, Fosburn, or any of those no-counts they're bringing in. My office no longer takes protection money from any merchant. They say you can't teach an old dog new tricks. Well, I'm an old dog, and I think I can change. At least, I'm going to give it one hell of a try. Excuse my language, ladies.
Smoke held out a hand, and Club shook it.
Welcome to the right side of the fence, Sheriff.
I think I like it over here, Smoke.
How are things in town, Sheriff Bowers?
Settling down, Miss Jenny. Been an awful lot of funerals, though. Boot Hill's rapidly filling up.
How did Cosgrove take your decision?
I think he's seen it coming, Miss Sally. Didn't none of them kick about it too much. I've been uneasy about the situation in town ever since Miss Janie passed on.
Did any of the big three have anything to do with my sister's death?
No. She died of the fever, or complications brought on by the fever. Van Horn held on to the ranch until Miss Jenny could get out here. That old man is randy to the core, let me tell you. You know there's gold up in the mountains.
I guessed as much.
Worth a fortune, so Cosgrove says. I'll tell you what I think. I think Biggers wants Fosburn spread. Fosburn wants Biggers spread, and Cosgrove wants it all. These guns that's coming in, well, I think they'll follow the orders of the man who offers them the most money, no matter which one of the big three they might be working for at the time. That's what I think.
How about the townspeople?
They want things to settle down. They're tired of Cosgrove and all the trouble. And they've told him so. Still telling him so when I left. Chung Lee told him that if any more trouble happens, he was going to starch his long handles so stiff they'd look like a suit of armor standing in the corner. Then he called him some things in Chinese that I'm pretty sure wasn't very complimentary.
What's his next move, Club?
I wish I knew. All I know is that Kit Silver is wiring for more gun hands to come in. And even Kit admits they'll be the scum of the earth. There is no law yet about two men settling their differences in the street. I can't interfere in that. But I am going to keep the peace in Red Light, Smoke. I mean that.
Good. I won't push inside the town limits, Club. But I won't be pushed either.
That's fair enough. You know that damn back-shooting Hankins has been snooping around here, don't you?
I suspected it. And some of the boys cut his sign yesterday.
But on the other hand, it would be a real shame if somebody called that damn Hankins out into the street now, wouldn't it?
Oh, it would that, Sheriff. It would that.
The fire in his belly had been so strong that Barry had taken his blankets outside the bunkhouse and slept under the stars, so the other men wouldn't hear the occasional muffled moan of pain that passed his lips. He finished a bottle of laudanum, and the pain eased, then went away. Breathing easier for the first time in hours, the town tamer looked up and stared long at the stars in God's heavens.
This is my last time to see him. Has to be. I'm not going out laying in some damn bed screaming in pain, unable to control myself. That ain't no way for a man to go out. A man ought to have the right to pick and choose his time and place of dying. And I'm gonna do just that.
It had been a week since that fine time in town with Smoke and Bad Dog and Wolf and the girl.
What a little gal Jenny is. If I'd have squared me a daughter, she would have been just like her. Couldn't ask for no finer.
Barry made up his mind. He rose and walked down to the creek. He stripped off his long johns and waded into the water. He knew that Smoke had gotten word from Clemmy Feathers that the town was overflowing with two-bit gun hands on the payroll of the Big Three. He bathed in the creek and shaved as carefully as possible in what life there was. He had hauled his clothes out of the bunkhouse with him. Now he put on a sparkling clean white shirt and a black string tie. He'd had his black suit done up nice by Chung Lee, and his handmade boots, which he seldom wore, were polished to a high sheen. He walked up to the barn. He saddled up and strapped on his match 45s, sticking two more 45s behind his gun belt. He had made out his will during the first week he was at Jenny's spread and given it to Van Horn. Van Horn, meanwhile, was sitting in his private quarters at the south end of the bunkhouse, drinking coffee in the dark and watching his old friend get ready to ride into Red Light and die. He longed to go with him, but he knew that Barry would resent it. Knew that the town tamer wanted it that way. But there was something he could do. Barry had no sooner left the yard than Van Horn slipped out of the bunkhouse. He headed for the barn.
I can make damn sure that Club Bowers and his deputies don't interfere.
In his bedroom, Smoke lay beside Sally and listened. He had heard Barry leave. He knew what Barry was going to do. And now he heard Van Horn lead his horse out of the barn. He had a strong suspicion what Van Horn was going to do. The old puncher knew a shortcut to town.
Goodbye, Barry. You're a good man.
Did you say something, honey?
No, dear. You must have been dreaming. Go back to sleep.
Hooray!
The livery man awoke to the sound of banging on the stable door.
Good God, let me put some bridges on, I'm coming! What the hell's so all fired you want to wake a man in the middle of the...
I rid hard to get here. Here's a dollar. Get over to the sheriff's office and tell him there's been a stage holdup at Red Creek Crossing. It's real bad. Dead folks all over the place. The outlaws took off up Devil's Pass. Move, man!
I'm jumping Jehoshaphat. Well, let me get my shirt and my boots
on. No time. No time, man.
All right, Dan. I'm gone.
Van Horn slipped back into the darkness of the livery and waited. Rummy-eyed old man beat it over to Club's place, and within 15 minutes, Club and his deputies were riding out for Red Creek.
It'll be a good 5 to 6 hours before they get back. By that time, it'll be all over. All but the burying.
Van Horn walked over to Clemmy's and sat on the porch with Moses, who had just gotten up to stoke up the fire. The men sipped coffee as the sky grew silver in the east. Barry stepped out of the cafe onto the boardwalk. He had just had a fine breakfast of biscuits and gravy and good, strong, hot black coffee. He had bought a genuine 5-cent cigar from the counterman.
Ah, man can't ask for much more.
The fire in his belly was gone, and Barry knew that it would never return. He brushed his coat back, exposing the butts of his 45s, then went for a little walk. He stopped for a time to pet a stray dog. The dog licked his hand, and Barry was pleased. Then he saw a knot of gun hands come walking out of the South End Hotel on their way to breakfast. One of the men was Luther Cone, and with him was his sidekick, equally no-count Jim Parrish. Barry had run both of them out of at least two towns that he could recall after two suspicious killings.
Might as well start here and now.
Barry stepped out into the street.
Cone! Parrish!
The men stopped.
Well, well, would you look at this, Parrish? It's old Barry himself. You riding the grub line, Barry?
Nope. I'm riding the killing line.
Huh? What do you mean, the killing line?
You working for Biggers, Fosburn, or Cosgrove?
All three, if it's any of your damn business.
You come to make war against a fine little teenage girl, huh?
If you're talking about Janie's daughter, she's just like her mama, a slutty little two-bit whore.
You'll not talk that way about her. Fill your hands, you bastard!
Cone and Parrish drew, or they tried to. Barry's right hand flashed and his 45 was there. Cone and Parrish went down in the dirt, both of them gut shot. Barry stepped two paces to one side and plugged a third man through the heart. He stepped back across the narrow street and into the alleyway. A bullet tugged at his sleeve, another clipped the brim of his hat, and another kicked dirt on his polished boots.
Damn it, I just polished them.
Barry knocked a leg out from under the man who dusted up his boots, then ran to the rear of a saddle and leather shop and slipped back up to the street, walking between it and the gaming house. He saw Dev White, a young Utah gun slick, peeping around the corner of the cafe. Dev hadn't been with that morning breakfast crew. Apparently word was getting around quickly and drawing the eager boys and wannabes out. Barry sighted him in, bullet the man sprawling. Suddenly, splinters torn to Barry's right cheek. He ignored the bleeding and dropped to one knee, leveling his 45. A New Mexico punk was sent to the ground, his belly punctured by town tamer lead. Jody Thomas, a North Dakota kid who was wanted for murder, came running out of the Eagle's Nest Hotel, his hands filled with 44s. Suddenly, he was knocked off his boots and went crashing through a window, back into the lobby. Barry looked up the street and saw Van Horn and Moses, both packing.
Stay out of this, you old goat!
We'll just keep it fair.
Fair, hell! I got him outnumbered!
Get that crazy fool!
Barry looked up to see Cosgrove at the upstairs window of his new apartment over his mining office. The street filled with guns for hire. Barry stepped to the other side of the alley, both hands filled with 45s.
Woo! Here I am, boys! I'm half puma, half wolf, and glory land bound! So step up here, and I'll punch your ticket to hell!
Then he opened fire. A bullet clipped Barry's ear, and another one burned his shoulder. He didn't feel a damn thing. He jammed his empty guns into leather and jerked out two old long-barreled peacemakers from behind his belt. And Barry ducked back into the early morning shadows of the alley. The street in front of the hotel was littered with wounded and dead. He ran around the gaming joint, and a man opened the rear door and stuck out a sawed-off 10-gauge and a small sack of shells.
You don't remember me, Barry. But I was bartender in a little mining town in Colorado you cleaned up. Give them no goods hell, old hoss.
Before Barry could thank the man, the door closed. Barry checked both barrels for blockage and loaded the greener up. He began walking toward the corner of the building. The left side of Barry's suit coat was drenched with blood from his mangled ear, and he had taken lead in his right leg. He walked on, ignoring the pain. Hell, he'd endured a lot worse from the pain in his belly. Dave Stockham and John Robinson came racing around the corner of the Keno joint. Barry smiled at him and gave the pair both barrels from the sawed-off express gun. The worthless pair was flung back, nearly cut in two from the heavy charge. Barry stepped into the narrow passageway between buildings and saw Cosgrove still standing in his window. The range was far too great to do much damage with that shotgun, but Barry gave the man both barrels to keep him honest. The shot had lost most of its punch when it reached Cosgrove, but it did bloody his neck and face and send him to the floor, certain he'd been mortally wounded.
God damn, that was satisfying.
Meanwhile, back at the ranch, Jenny sat down at the table with Smoke and Sally in the hands.
Where are Mr. Barry and Mr. Van Horn?
Oh. Well, Barry went into town, even the odds a little bit, honey. I expect Van Horn went to watch the show.
You mean?
Barry's dying, Jenny. This is the way he wanted to go out. After breakfast, Cooper, hitch up a team. Some of us will go in to bring the body back. Posco, you and Lad get shovels and ride up to the east slope by that lightning-blazed tree above the spring. Dig a deep hole. And be careful, Posco. That damn Hankins is probably prowling around. He'll shoot anybody he sees on this range. If you see him, drop him.
With pleasure.
Oh, I sure would like to be in town for this morning show. When Barry gets going, he's plumb hell with a shotgun.
Some lucky gun hand Barry not even seen shot him in the side. His leg buckled under him.
Time to end it. In the street, boys! Me against y'all! Holster your guns and meet me eyeball to eyeball! Who's got the sand to do it?
Around the corner, Moses lifted his rifle, but Van Horn put a gnarled hand on the barrel and shook his head. It was Barry's show now. Barry Sheridan, a tough from Oregon, stepped out onto the boards.
I'll meet you, Barry.
Well, come on, then! I ain't got all the time in the world, you know.
Barry stood tall and bloody in the center of the street. Andre McMahon joined Perry, as did four others. In the lobby of the hotel, the older, wiser gunny stayed put. Kit Silver presided over the gathering of shooters.
Fools, can't they see that Barry ain't got nothing to lose?
$50 says they'll get him, Kit.
Oh, they'll get him, Slick. But they won't none of them be alive to brag about it. That's too high a price to pay for 10 seconds of glory.
If you want to call killing a dying man something glorious, hell with this. I'm holding my ashes out of here. Cosgrove and Biggers and Fosburn ain't fit to polish that Jenny girl's boots.
That ain't what I'd like to polish about her, Slim.
Slim lifted a .44 and shot that brute between the eyes, knocking him out of the chair. The gun hawk looked around the room.
Anybody else got anything nasty they want to say about that little girl?
No one did.
Well, I don't like making war again, kids.
Shady Weed stood up.
All right, out with you, Slim.
Kit Silver poured a shot glass of whiskey into his hot coffee and stirred in a spoonful of sugar.
I tried to tell them money men this wouldn't work. Might take time, but the right cause near about always wins. And that kid's in the right. I'm out of this. I'm gonna stick around, but I ain't rightly sure which side I'm gonna be on.
Then you better get clear of my sight.
You wanna try and make me brown?
Hell, I think I'll stick around too. I'm with you, kid.
And me.
Curtis Brown suddenly felt like changing the subject.
I don't hear no shooting out there.
Barry's just standing in the street, grinning at them fools. Now he's saying something.
I'd pay to know what he's telling them.
What a pitiful looking sight.
You're the pitiful one. Man, you're bleeding bad.
I'll live long enough to kill you.
Sheridan flushed and grabbed iron. Barry shot him in the chest. And then dropped to one knee as he cleared leather with his left hand .45. When the smoke cleared, Andre, Rusty, and their friends were down and hit hard. Barry staggered to his boots, blood leaking from two more bullet holes. He almost fell, stepping up onto the boardwalk. But he managed to stay on his feet and reload, just as Eddie King stepped out from the doctor's office.
My brother Vern just died, you son of a bitch!
Good. One less punk on the face of the earth.
Barry drilled Eddie right through the brisket. A would-be tough and full-time bully leaned out of a second-story window and sighted Barry in with a rifle. Barry stood perplexed as he stared at the dead tough lying on the ground. There was a bullet hole in his forehead.
You ain't dying that way. You're too good a man to die that way.
Leaning up against a post, Barry looked at Kit Silver standing on the boardwalk, a smoking gun in his hand.
Why, Kit?
It's a free country town, Tamer. I can change sides if I want to.
That Jenny gal, she'll do, Kit.
I'll see to it personal, old son. You save me a place where you're going. I figure this for my last fight.
Shady Bryant and Slim Water stepped out to join Kit.
Count us in too, Barry.
Good men. All of you. You make me proud. I told all of you more than once, there was a streak of good in you. Even when I was running you out of some damn two-bit town. You just proved me right. Now point me toward a nest of snakes. While I still got the strength to do some stomping.
Second door to your left. But they'll be waiting on you, Barry.
Barry gave Kid a bloody smile.
I wouldn't have it any other way.
Town Tamer staggered to the door and kicked it in. He walked in shooting. Smoke halted the wagon about a mile from town. Van Horn and three of Cosgrove's men were heading his way, leading Barry's horse. Barry, wrapped in a blanket, was tied across the saddle.
Smoke, these old boys here decided they didn't like the idea of making war against a young girl. Before he died, Barry vouched for them. He said they might need a bath, but they's good boys.
Well, that's good enough for me. Welcome to the spread, boys. I can guarantee you the finest food you ever ate.
Yep. Miss Jenny and your missus really make tubfuls of donuts?
Every day, Slim.
Lord, I found a home.
The men placed the blood-soaked blanket contained in Barry into the hay-filled wagon bed.
Oh, I like that man.
We all did. Hadn't it been for him, I'd have been riding the outlaw trail. All three of us would. I ain't saying we're angels. But I ain't robbed nobody or done harm to a woman. And I ain't gonna start now.
You should have seen it, Smoke. Barry either outright killed or got mortal lead in 26 men this morning.
26?
Hell, that about passes your record, don't it, Smoke?
Yeah, it does.
And them figures is right on the mark. Barry had 9 slugs in him before he finally gave up the ghost. But he went out with a smile on his lips, knowing he'd done a good thing. Cosgrove and Fosborn was in shock, I think. The Undertaker was so happy, he's rubbing his hands and smiling to beat the band. Finally, old fat Fosborn, he got to making threats about this and that and Slim. He went up to him and punched him dead in the mouth. Punched him down a big mud puddle. Cosgrove, he run off back to his office. Really ain't much to them men. Biggers neither, I'm thinking.
Barry went out gentle, talking about Jenny. I really think he started out liking the girl, and in a short time, grew to love her like she was his own.
She knows why he left, I told her, and Sally's with her now. They're all up at the East Slope. Kit, would you boys mind staying at the ranch and looking after things while we have the funeral?
We'd be on it too, Smoke. And the ranch and everything on the place will be just like you left it. All the three of us will be dead in the yard.